Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of January 19th, 2019. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the educator, author, and climate hawk, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, 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 good. So, you're way too young to know it, but back in the day when TVs were black and white, there was a guy named Christopher Lydon who had a news station, a news show on Channel 2 every night about Boston.
And really?
And in fact, I think Christopher Lydon, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Christopher Lydon who made the first podcast, because he had this idea of encapsulating a story in a sound file, and that somehow he was instrumental in the development of podcasts.
No kidding. Well, I thought that was you.
No, well, I was right there with him. I was right by his side. But anyway, nowadays, Chris Lydon has a show on WGBH radio here in Boston. So if you're listening around the world, you can check it. There's a WGBH website. It's GBH, right? If you live in Boston, you're probably familiar with it.
Our BUR is the radio.
Is it BUR? Okay, take it back. BUR is the one he's working on. Excuse me. And it's this show called Open Source where he interviews people, right? And this past weekend they had a quite an interesting show, right, Mariah? Tell me about the show that Christopher Lydon had on his open source radio program.
Yes, first of all, just a shout out to him. I really do enjoy his programs. I think they're excellent, really interesting. This show, he had Bill McKibben, Naomi Oreskes, and Daniel Schrag sort of talking. First, he interviewed Bill McKibben and then had a sort of panel, mini panel discussion with Naomi Oreskes and Daniel Schrag. And so Bill McKibben, of course, is the man who started 350.org and who has been writing about climate change since the beginning, pretty much.
He wrote The End of Nature in like 1989 or something,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah, right there with Hansen. And, of course, has also written, I think since then he's written maybe, eight, nine books, yeah. Earth, EAARTH, and Oil and Honey, all kinds of great books. So he was talking a little bit about what he sees, and one of the big things he said was the importance of, whether it's hopeful or not hopeful, engaging people. That's, you know, whatever your outlook is, the most important thing is to be engaged with it, because there's nothing you can do if you're not engaged with it. There's definitely no hope if people aren't getting involved and doing whatever they can. So I missed the full part of his. I tuned in a little late.
They tend to be long shows. They're like a two-hour show with lots of detail, right?
Yep. He really dives in pretty deeply. And so then in the second part, he was really focused with Naomi Oreskes and Daniel Schrag, focusing significantly on the Green New Deal. And interestingly, Naomi Oreskes is the professor, the history of science professor over at Harvard, who wrote the book Merchants of Doubt, which then was made into a movie. And the book is fantastic, mm-hmm. and the movie is also compelling. So I definitely recommend both of those. And she really sort of pulled off the Oz, right? The Wizard of Oz front from
ignore that man behind the curtain.
Yeah. I mean, it was really sort of like there was a group of folks who were responsible for telling us that tobacco is not bad for us and that there's no hole in the ozone. And it's kind of the same team of players and they're the same folks that are doing all of this denial around climate change. They have a whole playbook of strategies.
That was essentially her book, was revealing it was the same crew and what their techniques were, because she's like a philosopher of science or a historian of science.
Right? Yeah, she does history. She teaches the history of science at Harvard. She's also a geologist it's her undergrad degree, but really quite a remarkable.
Quite talented, right?
That's the truth. So she said that instead of the Green New Deal, she thinks it should be the Green Apollo.
Okay.
You may be able to speak more to this than I, but it's just in the way that the Apollo came together and the kind of sort of synergistic energy that was needed to pull the country together around it and the big mission that it was. And
Well, let me comment, because I was of a certain age at that time, and I was just mesmerized. I watched everything. I knew every National Geographic with a layout of all the planets in the solar system, and all. I remember the night that the three astronauts got burned up right then, oxygen, and the news came on. It was just devastating.
Yeah.
And but what was really cool was that the country was committed to it, that Kennedy had done the right thing. But the money was available. Right? There was a commitment to it. And I think one of the things that marked out that space program is they had, you know, redundant and triplicate programs for everything. Right? So if you say money's not an object, or money's not a problem, you have four different ways to solve the same problem. And one of them will work. Right? If the first one doesn't work, you get another one. If that one doesn't work, you get a third. Right? So that's how they approached it. And it took a lot of money, but it succeeded. And so, and it was high. I mean, those guys flew to the moon with what would amount to be a $2 calculator that you buy at Target today. Right, cool thing.
Yeah.
And all the spinoffs from that. So yeah, it was the Apollo program was quite impactful on the United States. Yes.
And I can't speak to exactly what she's. Why she thinks the Green Apollo is a better term than the Green New Deal. But I could speculate that it's this sort of what else could possibly be as important for us to spend our money on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, there shouldn't be a cap on this problem because it's such an urgent problem that we should be doing everything we can to address it. And again, I'm putting thoughts into her, attaching them to her term, but at any rate, it's not to say that she didn't, at least what I got from the interview, it's not to say that she didn't agree with the Green New Deal. She and Daniel Schrag both seem to think that there's a lot of good pieces of that Green New Deal. And certainly that, FDR, attaching it to FDR is a poignant thing to do. The FDR asked for a lot of sacrifices at the time, that 35% of the GDP went to address what was going on in the country, and that another parallel being that it's not the Green New Deal is not just addressing environmental problems, it's addressing a whole host of problems that are connected with it in terms of job creation and infrastructure, ailing infrastructure. It actually lifts up a whole lot more things than just
and very importantly,
problem.
I mean, a just transition, I think, is one of their buzzwords, right?
Absolutely.
That we don't leave anybody behind as we did in the New Deal. And I guess I would, I heard a little bit of the Christopher Lydon show, but, my reaction was that there's a technical, you can have a technical bent. In which case you think about the Apollo program, where the solution is technical. You throw enough money at it, you solve the problem. I think the charm for the Green New Deal name for me is that it includes the sort of social aspect and sort of this leveling thing that everyone can understand. Green New Deal, jobs, social justice. And I didn't listen to the show in its entirety. That's how I would cut sort of, say, calling it the new Apollo project versus the new the Green New Deal, right?
So Oreskes did say in regards to the helping find jobs and so on and so forth that one of the biggest and most pernicious lies, and she said this was a big point for her, that one of the biggest and most pernicious lies is that addressing environmental issues is bad for the economy. Mm. That study after study shows that environmental initiatives actually spur the economy. And so in that regard, it does have this kind of social justice, lifting people up aspect to it that she, I think, thoroughly agrees with.
Right.
Trying to override that lie that it's, environment, you have to pick environment or economy. That's just something that these playbook, these folks that she has talked a lot about, Merchants of Doubt, have created that narrative, and we need to create a new narrative that says no, that's not true.
You basically
at all.
Reject the premise of the false duality, right? The idea that
exactly.
It's either the birds and the bees, or we all get to have a big bank account. That's not just simply not a true, interesting.
Right. So yeah, and you know, they definitely talked about there's a lot of tension in the Green New Deal, and it's not, it certainly doesn't have all of the answers, and we don't know all of the answers. Daniel Schrag, I think, talked a little bit about the tension in the Green New Deal. Is it, you know, rests on government responsibility. And he said, you know, capitalism and competition is one of the best forces we have, and yet we're also saying it's the problem. And so there's a great tension there that's pretty hard to sort of parse and resolve.
Right.
And
I mean, so, there was a book. Now, this goes off into the left field, but I read a review of a book that came out. I didn't read the book. I read the review of a book that came out 2 or 3 years ago called Climate Leviathan. And it was a conscious imitation of, I guess it was Hobbes, who wrote Leviathan in the 1750s or something. And the way the review put it, at the time that Hobbes wrote the original Leviathan book, they were trying to sort out what should a government look like after the kings are gone, right? So the 1750s was a lot of time talking about how do you govern yourself, and we ended up with the U.S. Constitution. But they were trying to parse out how is power exercised in a nation, right? And so these new guys recently wrote a book called Climate Leviathan, where they're trying to figure out how does the world govern itself in a climate future. So you just touched on it, right? There's a tension between capitalism and sustainability, right? They're kind of at war with each other. It's a two-edged sword, right? So how does that play out over 150 years? Right? What is the world going to look like in 200 years when we have resolved this question of is capitalism good for us or bad for us? Right? I mean, that's a big question, right? But it's one that's interesting to, because we've talked before. I mean, is capitalism the problem or is it the solution? Right?
Yeah, right. We've gone in kind of circles about it because it is a big problem, and it's not a clear, easy answer.
Right. Although I think the argument that, I mean, my feeling is you're never going to get rid of self-interest, right? Greed and self-interest are built into the human genetics. So somehow, whatever system you come up with has to recognize and manage that. If any of our listeners have actually read Climate Leviathan, they can send us their opinion about it. I certainly haven't read it.
On the note of Oreskes and books and 150 years into the future, she actually wrote a book that was, it's real short, but I found it very entertaining. It's a fiction book in, you know, some good climate science fiction called The Collapse of Western Civilization, a view from the future. And it's, you know, 2393 looking back at how we got ourselves out of, happened to us and how we got ourselves out of the climate catastrophe and all kinds of things.
Let me plug the show we just put up few days ago, which is just interesting. But the thing that I carried out of the recent show was the admonition that we ought to be putting a zero in front of our dates so that the year 2019 should actually be 0/2019, on the assumption that, you know, there's going to be 10,000 years ahead of us, so there's going to be a 12,019 someday, and if we have the zero there, we remember how, you know, that we're looking at a long-term future that we got to plan for. So anyway,
clever.
So we'll get a link to the Christopher Lydon open source show. Those are great people, right?
Only
the greatest people. On Christopher Lydon Show. Let me say some of the other things that we should step through and just note. Over the past few weeks, what has happened, one of the interesting things that happened is that the Supreme Court of the United States cited in a court case with Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey and basically approved the idea that Maura Healey could request documents from Exxon Mobil Corporation about what it knew about climate change. And that's a fairly big deal because Exxon Mobil because the Supreme Court spoke, they basically get no way to resist these kind of subpoenas. And all the questions about whether or not Exxon defrauded its own stockholders by withholding information on climate change is now going to be open for discussion in much the same way that all the the cigarette people did years ago, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So I just want. So there's one.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
One other interesting thing that we'll put up a link to is that a wind turbine company has chosen Massachusetts as its headquarters, a European wind turbine company that will be building one of the, I guess it's Vineyard Wind off of Martha's Vineyard, has decided to put their headquarters in Boston. Fine. What does that mean? Well, it means over the next 100 years, right? We're talking 100-year time frames. That means Boston will be the dominant, if everything works out, Boston will be the dominant clean energy and wind turbine center for the East Coast. And you can imagine all of the wind turbines that are going to be installed up and down the East Coast and what an economic boon that's going to be for Boston. So it's quite a plum to pull down, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of those things where it's important to be on the leading edge of these of the technology, right? So you are the people that people turn to – businesses turn to you for advice on how to get it up and running, or they're buying it from you. I mean, it's always a bonus to have that, that in your pocket.
And we should keep in mind that the fact that that company moved here and gives Boston and Massachusetts such a head start is because of policy passed by the state of Massachusetts at the urging of climate hawks to go big on wind energy, right? If climate hawks hadn't pushed the state government to do that, then there wouldn't be the opportunity for this company to come here. So, to
That's
your point,
great.
It's a big deal.
Go climate hawks.
Go climate hawks. The other interesting thing that came up this week from a climate perspective is out in California. We've talked about this in the past. The big fires out on the West Coast. We talked about this all summer, right, Mariah? We went round and round about the campfire and the Paradise Fire. And it turns out that in California, the California utility, Pacific Gas and Electric, by state law, is financially responsible for the damage of any fires that were caused by its equipment, regardless of what other extenuating circumstances there are, which means PG&E now owns the liability for all of those big fires, which is enormous. PG&E decided to go into bankruptcy to try and protect itself. Fine. That raises all kinds of questions in my mind about whether or not the utility model of the privately held utility is a viable one, whether or not California should just dissolve PG&E and have a publicly owned utility that does the right thing. And it's also sort of the flutter of angel wings that these big companies are susceptible to climate issues, right? The company in Puerto Rico, the power company in Puerto Rico basically failed, right? The company in Houston after Hurricane Harvey, that failed, right? So these big corporate things, it's kind of a wake-up call. I don't know if you saw any of that, Mariah, but, I mean, it's kind of a coming wave that people who stock people look at this and say there's more to this than meets the eye, right?
Yeah. I didn't see a ton about that. I did follow this is a little off topic, but Jay Inslee is planning to win the president, or hoping he will win the presidency on climate change, right?
Really?
So we've got a couple candidates now that are getting out there with climate change as one of their major platforms.
Which is
so
great.
That's a big deal to see that, you know, that he, I think he announced that on January 2nd. And he's from the West Coast too, right?
Right.
He's up in Washington.
Right.
And that's what made me kind of think of it. But
well, there's a couple of senators named Booker, right? One's a Republican, one's a Democrat.
Cory Booker.
Cory Booker is the Democrat, right?
I think so, yeah.
And he, so I, despite the, I'm not sure about the exact name, he has endorsed the Green New Deal and he's running for president. So again, a second, as you say, presidential candidates have, the Green New Deal has so struck a chord with people that these guys have to talk about it, right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's like one of those things where, okay, maybe the Green New Deal doesn't stand a chance of getting put through, but it's really bringing climate change to the forefront.
I mean, Elizabeth Warren has signed up for it. So there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so we should put it down there.
That's a good hopeful note to end on, right?
Yeah, hopeful note. We've got some momentum, the big mo. Let me just tell everybody quickly that there are two MCAN events that are coming up. On the 24th of January is a lobbying day at the Massachusetts State House. So you can go to the MCAN website, sign up, and you can go into the State House, find your state representative with all the help and support of MCAN and the Massachusetts Power Forward Alliance to go lobby your state rep. It's a blast if you've never done it. Maybe we should have another exercise in how to lobby another podcast about how to lobby your state rep. But it's fun. If you've never done it, it's really something to try. Second thing that's coming up is that MCAN is having its, I think, fourth or fifth Muni Summit. So what's a Muni? A Muni is a municipal power company, right? So we're like Hull in Massachusetts, south of Boston, is its own power company. I think Concord has its own power company. They don't get their electricity from National Grid. And so the question of how to make those municipal power and light companies more responsive and more green is an activist dream, right? Very close to the people. You can influence your municipal light and power. So if you're in a town that has municipal light and power, you can go to the MCAN summit on that on January 26th. Again, you can sign up at the website. We'll put up a link to it. It's massclimateaction.net is the website. Finally, folks, if you want to send us brickbats or praise, if you want to comment on anything we say, tell us what we should do differently, anything like that, you can now send us an email to the email address podcast@massclimateaction.net. I'll say that again. Very easy to remember. podcast@massclimateaction.net. All one word there. So please let us know if you like the show, what we ought to do differently, what we ought to do better, all that kind of stuff. We'd love to hear from you. We will put up links to what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. We'll be up on the Facebook page @massclimateaction. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher and all the other kind of podcast distribution apps. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon and implement the Green New Deal. There you go. We'll change it a little bit.
So Mariah, incremental
change. Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, everyone, for listening in. We're happy to have you along. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.